You are tuned to WPKN, that's 89.5 FM from Bridgeport and in the Hamptons, New London, East Lyme, and Westerly, Rhode Island on 88.7 WPKM in Montauk. Well, last week we had a guest from the College Republicans in Yukon who spoke about bad behavior at a speech by Ann Coulter. Well, this week our guest literally wrote the book on bad behavior. The book is called Unhinged, Exposing Liberals Gone Wild, and the author is Michelle Malkin. And Michelle, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So what prompted you to write this book?
Well, I would say the genesis was covering the 2004 election campaign, and I kept track on my website, my blog, of many incidents of unhinged behavior on the part of registered Democrats, rank-and-file union members, Kerry supporters, and in many cases, elected Democrats themselves, that were quite shocking to me and that were not getting the mainstream media attention that I thought they should be getting. One of the main themes of the book is that there's this caricature in a lot of the mainstream media that it's conservatives and Republicans who are the ones who are angry, poisoning the public discourse, hate-filled, bigoted, prone to violence. And after covering the last election, it was absolutely clear to me that that caricature far better fits the left these days than the right. And so I set out to make a case for that, and I've documented hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of examples to paint a picture that I think is rather irrefutable of the movement of liberalism and the Democrat Party off the rails.
Now, your book is obviously very well endnoted. Every chapter has got a lot of endnotes, a lot of sources.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel for lack of a better phrase, you feel you're being fair and balanced?
Well, look, I am a conservative journalist, a conservative columnist, and so, you know, my biases are on the table. But I think I've made a very clear, convincing, and well-documented case that that there is a huge problem with the Democrat Party and that it starts out at the top. And I think I am being fair because one thing that I did was point out that, A, I'm not arguing that there aren't nutballs and conspiracy theorists and hate mongers in the conservative movement and Republican Party. They're everywhere. That's not the point of the book, though. The point is to show that, you know, in a lot of cases, too many, I think, it's Democrats who are not policing their own, and it's elected officials in the Democrat Party who do not distance themselves from the extremists in their own ranks. I do not think that is true of Republicans, particularly mainstream Washington Republicans, in the same way. I think that, in fact, over the last couple of years, my side has gone out of its way to distance itself and to condemn over-the-top rhetoric. And that's why, for example, Trent Lott is no longer majority leader. He made comments at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday party, you'll remember, that caused a huge uproar and that suggested to many people that he was embracing pro-segregationist policies. And as soon as mainstream Republicans realized that that perception had become reality, Trent Lott was forced to resign from his position. Now, you compare that to, I think, an analogous case on the other side of the aisle where Dick Durbin earlier this year, the Senate minority whip, number two in the leadership in Washington, made comments that blatantly compared our troops at Guantanamo Bay to the likes of the Soviets in the Gulag, Pol Pot, and Nazis. This caused a huge uproar among military families, among veterans of all political affiliations, and Dick Durbin was forced to apologize for those remarks, but then ended up blaming the right wing for misinterpreting them. And significantly, and here's where I illustrate fairness, I single out you know, a few Democrats who actually did stand up to this kind of extremist rhetoric, and in that particular case, it was the mayor of Chicago, Democrat Richard Daley, who stood up, condemned Dick Durbin's remarks, and asked him for the apology. And I think we don't see enough of that kind of dissent on the left against this kind of unhingedness that I talk about. And, you know, if the Democrat Party has electoral aspirations in 2008 and hopes to restore its image of sanity, they're going to need more Richard Daleys and less Dick Durbins and Howard Deans.
I think one of the other Democrats you mentioned in the book is our senior Senator Christopher Dodd.
Yeah.
Who spoke up when Eason Jordan made his statement in Switzerland earlier this year.
Yes, yes, that's absolutely right. And what happened there was former CNN executive Eason Jordan was speaking in Davos at one of these fancy schmancy, you know, world get-togethers, mostly, you know, anti-American leftist type from Europe and around the world. And Eason Jordan essentially suggested that journalists from around the world were being targeted deliberately and shot by American troops. And he made these remarks without any kind of substantiation. And it was Christopher Dodd and Barney Frank, the very liberal Democrat from Massachusetts, who stood up there and who were also, you know, in attendance at the forum in the same meeting where Eason Jordan had spoken, said, wait a minute, you can't say that without backing it up. And Eason Jordan denied that he had said what he had said. The Davos Forum covered up for him, basically, by refusing to release a tape of the statements, and it was thanks in large part to the blogosphere that Eason Jordan was held accountable for those outrageous remarks. And it happens to be an attitude and a thesis that's held not only by a lot of mainstream journalists, but most of the anti-war left in this country, and, you know, unfortunately, many elected Democrats as well. But thankfully, and I had a lot of praise for Barney Frank and Christopher Dodd for recognizing just how outrageous those remarks were immediately. You know, they didn't have to sit and think about it or consult with their political strategists before they realized just how much damage rumor-mongering, baseless rumor-mongering like that and smearing of our troops is and can be.
I actually got a response from Senator Dodd myself when I wrote to him, because I know the meeting was closed and it was hard to confirm the statement was made. So I asked him, did he really say that? Mm-hmm. And he wrote back, didn't answer my question, but said this is a very serious charge and it's being looked into.
Yeah.
So he sort of answered it without answering it.
Yeah, yeah.
Your book came out, it looks like you were finishing it in August. It came out November 1st, is that
correct?
The right date?
Mm-hmm.
So it came out before Katrina. Would the aftermath of Katrina made your book?
Actually, in the foreword and in the conclusion, I was able to make reference to a lot of the unhingedness that surrounded the post-Katrina aftermath. And you had statements from, you know, the likes of Cindy Sheehan talking about occupied New Orleans. And then you had Kanye West's remarks, the rapper who continues to believe that the incompetence and bungling on the part of many local, state, and federal officials was somehow rooted in racism against blacks. And, of course, Louis Farrakhan, who believes to this day that the levees were bombed. You know, this kind of conspiracy mongering and paranoia is very poisonous in public discourse today. But there have been very few Democrats who've disassociated themselves from that. And I would have to say it was probably one of the most significantly, you know, damaging theories, political theories of the year, that somehow Bush had orchestrated this because he wanted to cleanse New Orleans of blacks. And, you know, it's almost unspeakably stupid. And also laughable when you look, I mean, to be honest, and I've been one of the foremost conservative critics of FEMA and Michael Brown's performance, when you look at just how incompetent a lot of these officials are, even if they did have as racist views as are being ascribed to them by the unhinged left, they couldn't execute it if they tried.
You know, as I've been known to say on this program, there's no problem so bad a government couldn't make worse. And Katrina
exactly.
seems to be a great illustration of that.
Indeed.
Well, it's traditionally at the end of the year, people look back and analyze the best of, the worst of 2005. So could you give us your top couple of most unhinged moments of 2005?
Well, in terms of the election, there were so many examples of incidents involving unhinged Democrats that should have made front page news but didn't. And I would say that leading right up to Election Day, in Florida, you had several worrisome cases of liberals gone absolutely wild. There was, for example, a man named Barry Seltzer in southern Florida who was so incensed at the mere sight of Catherine Harris, the former Secretary of State who was running for Congress and actually won her seat. She and a group of her supporters were out on a corner waving to commuters, and Barry Seltzer put the pedal to the metal and, according to police reports, rammed his Cadillac into the crowd where Catherine Harris was standing. And later, his lawyer attributed this to, you know, his Barry Seltzer merely, you know, expressing dissenting political free speech. That is absolutely unhinged. You had a number of cases in Florida and elsewhere across the country where union members were storming GOP headquarters, Bush-Cheney offices. And, you know, this rose to the level far beyond everyday election pranks. And we get that on both sides, signs being stolen, cars being keyed. But on the left, you had cases of violence, people being punched out, cardboard cutouts of Bush being ambushed, chainsaws and bayonets being taken to campaign signs. And I think a lot of this was driven by what Charles Krauthammer coined as Bush derangement syndrome, that these people don't merely have disagreements on politics and policy with the president and the White House, but have personal issues, as they say in pop psychology, with the president himself. And I quoted a number of liberal media elites, supposedly sane commentators in the press, who confessed their absolute hatred for George Bush. And I think that, you know, when a lot of these people say we need to move on and heal, that they're projecting, that they really need to look in the mirror themselves and heal themselves first before they criticize anybody else.
I was just going to ask you about BDS, Bush derangement syndrome,
yeah.
But you beat me to the punch. Now, nothing comes from nothing. So where is this coming to? Where is this coming from? What are people reacting to?
Well, in the case of Jonathan Chait, who was a writer for the New Republic and also for the Los Angeles Times, who wrote a seminal little piece a couple of years ago called The Case for Bush Hatred, you know, I think there's a little bit of class envy going on, resentment of Bush's station in life, you know, somebody who was the son of coming from a wealthy political family, and a sense that somehow he didn't deserve anything that he has gotten and hasn't worked for it. And Jonathan Chait voiced this antagonism that stemmed from, you know, not only the way the president looked, but the way he talked, the way he dressed, the way he acts, and it's, you know, it's quite troubling to me. I mean, a lot of political analysts, historians say now that they haven't seen anything like this hatred since, you know, the days of Nixon, and I think that there's a lot of truth to that. But there's a number of other reasons for this unhingedness. I mean, Bush the personality is one thing, but I think that there's a couple of other things, and I've experienced this personally myself. And one of those things is that, you know, the left has become, I think, really unhinged over the fact that it's lost this absolute control and monopoly that it's had over how news and information is disseminated in the 21st century. It used to be, you know, three dinosaur networks and the Washington Post and the New York Times. And, you know, in the last 10 years, they've lost that, 10, 15 years. If you look at the rise of conservative talk radio, the Internet, the blogosphere, Fox News, and those have been, you know, powerful countervailing forces, and they're not going away. And I think that that has really thrown them off balance, and they're trying to fight back. I mean, I think a lot of the far left has been successful organizing on the internet themselves, and I think that's what explains this whole phenomenon of Howard Dean and the Daily Kos, which is one of the top liberal sites on the internet, one of the most influential blogs out there. And they have really driven what used to be the mainstream Democrat leadership to pander to the Cindy Sheens of the world and the Michael Moores of the world, and it's something that's going to come to bite Democrat aspirants in the bud. Excuse me, but I mean, you look at Hillary Clinton, for example, and now she's having to contend with Code Pink protests and Cindy Sheehan protests the same way George Bush is now. And that's going to be a huge problem in the next couple of years, I think.
We are just about out of time. Hope I can ask you another question.
Sure.
What do you think are good resources on the internet for both conservatives and liberal Democrats?
Well, I mentioned the Daily Kos, and that seems to be, liberal central. And you really do get a sense for, the pulse of where the unhinged left is. There's another site called TheDemocraticUnderground.com. And, it's funny because even people like Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of the vice presidential candidate and Senator John Edwards, who is a frequenter there, will often distance themselves from the site when they go overboard in so many cases, whether they're trashing the troops or bashing President Bush or dealing in a lot of these conspiracy theories. But if you want to see what's on the minds of, the Bush haters, that's the place to go. On the right side of the blogosphere, there's a huge menu of political blogs, military blogs, blogs that cover the war on terror. And Pajamas Media is, what I'm a part of now. It's sort of a conglomerate of some 70, different and varying diverse blogs from the right and the left that cover a wide variety of topics. And it's a good starting place. There's my blog, michellemalkin.com, and I've got a huge blog roll. In other words, a huge list of other resources, some of my favorite blogs. And a lot of people will not confess to reading it, but obviously the Drudge Report every day, every morning, gives you a sense of what the news of the day is and some of the stories that the mainstream media isn't covering.
And let's see, in your book, the end of your introduction, you say, "Let the healing begin." Your afterword is called "The Road to Recovery." But in between, you wield a mighty sword. So are you being sincere, or is this really just one big snark?
Well, yeah, of course there's quite a bit of snark in it. I mean, that is part of my personality. A lot of it is very humorous. But I think if you just take two chapters, the one that I wrote on the anti-war left called "They Don't Support Our Troops," and the one I wrote on exposing liberal bigotry and hatred called "You Are One Sick Gook," which comes from a typical hate mail that I receive every day, every hour practically, you'll see that there's a very serious side to this book to talk about the damage that a lot of the unhinged left does to political debate, and particularly when we are at a time of war. It would be one thing if a lot of the behavior and rhetoric that I talk about was simply relegated to, a few fringe liberal campuses, but when it's tolerated at the highest levels of the Democrat Party, smearing our troops, suggesting conspiracy theories about who was behind the September 11th attacks, and suggesting, for example, as Jim McDermott did, the Democrat congressman from Seattle, that the capture of Saddam Hussein was staged. to what's going on campuses, and you made reference to this at the top of the show, and it's probably a good way to wrap things up here at the end, to talk about the intolerance and bigotry and criminal behavior of a lot of liberals who refuse to even allow conservative dissent on campuses. And, you know, I'm being sincere here when I point out the double standard, that when conservatives go on campuses and have shoes and ties and cups of salad dressing tossed at them for fostering some sort of intellectual diversity on these liberal-dominated campuses, I think the left really does have to look at the mirror and ask itself if it is being sincere, if they're the ones being true to their principles of tolerance and compassion and understanding. There's a very ugly side to the left that gets covered up in a lot of the mainstream media, and that a lot of mainstream Democrats are in denial about. And this book forces them to look in the mirror.
And again, the title of the book?
Unhinged, Exposing Liberals Gone Wild.
And your website is?
Simple enough, michellemalkin.com, michellemalkin.com.
Michelle, thank you very much for joining us. Do you have any final words for our wonderful listeners?
Oh, just a thank you for the time. And if you're looking for a last-minute Christmas gift, this is a good one to give, not just to, not just to and among conservatives, but also, I really would like sane liberals to take a look at it and see that the assessment is a helpful one. I joke that the book is an intervention for the left, but I seriously do believe that there are sane Democrats out there. I have many of them in my family, for example, in Berkeley, no less. And I think that, for those Democrats and liberals who do care about the direction of this country in a time of war, that this would make a good Christmas gift. And lastly, I'd like to say Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners, and have a great new year.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
Bye-bye.
This is WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM and 88.7 WPKM Montauk.